Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can you hear me?
Oh, wait, I don't have my microphone over here now. Can you hear me better?
I can you hear me?
I can't hear you. What are you saying?
Yeah,
I hear you just fine. But the big question is, can you hear me? All right, let's get going.
hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 594. My name, as always, is Lisa Sheps. I'm joined, as always, by my lovely, talented, and beautiful co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. During the time of COVID, we are virtual and pre-recorded. Stick with us.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Berlin has bars, but Paris, Shanghai has silk and Madrid guitars, but Paris, in Cairo.
It is Wednesday, December 9th, 2020. On the show today, we have Sky Candy and their production or event, Home for the Holidays. And later on, we'll be speaking to the folks at Austin Shakespeare with their class, The Bard and Bollywood. All that with news and views of the world of theater in Washington, D.C., in Austin, Texas, in Pierre, North Dakota, and Point North. Stick with us. We'll be back after this song.
It's very gay.
Ah, Paris.
I love me some Paris.
I do love me some Perry.
When I first moved to, or when I first sold my company, I had plans on moving to Paris for a year and living there, but I didn't do it.
Did you go visit at least?
Oh, I visited a whole bunch of times, but I wanted to live there. I really did. I had the money and the time, and I didn't do it. And the silliest reasons, I was afraid that Junior, my dog at the time, would have to be quarantined, and I did not do any research, and they don't need to be quarantined.
I was like, France is one of those countries that you don't.
It's usually only island countries that need, like Hawaii and Great Britain.
Great Britain.
So, but not France. But
Australia is another one.
I was going to live in Montmartre. I had it all laid out.
I lived in a, on a, I went over and did the Marcel Marceau stuff in high school, but then I lived on a sailboat in the south of France one summer.
I don't want to hear that. That's a whole nother story of mine. We'll talk about that some other time. So, you might want to, you might ask why I was playing that song, A Paris, from the Broadway musical Follies.
Because you know I love Follies?
That's exactly the reason. But no, in Playbill.com did a whole thing on upcoming movie musicals. Did you see that?
No, they just did a movie musical of Follies?
Upcoming. So there's a million. I was just surprised at how many movies are going to be made of or are in the works to be made. Of course, we know about The Prom. Everybody's talking about Jamie. Do you know anything about that one?
I've heard that they're doing it, but I don't know a lot about it. I just
so it's about it. It's about a young male identified person that wants to be a drag queen.
Yes.
And we'll hear a little bit of music from that later. Of course, we have In the Heights and West Side Story. We know about those. But here are things that are in production that I didn't necessarily know. Cyrano.
Cyrano, I knew about.
Okay. And so Dear Evan Hansen, we knew about. Little Mermaid. Tick, Tick, Boom, we knew about. 13, I think we talked about. American Idiot.
Oh, you know what? I think I did a while ago. They mentioned that. But I haven't thought about it in a while because Amy loves it. an idiot, and I sent that to her.
Beautiful. The color purple, Come From Away, Follies, Guys and Dolls.
Follies and Guys and Dolls are really strange. They're just such old musicals being redone for film. Interesting.
Gypsy.
Another, well, that they've been trying to do forever. That's the one Barbara's been working on for decades.
And my favorite, Jekyll and Hyde. And your
really?
Favorite.
Yeah. Who's going to play the Jekyll and Hyde?
These are all, so the director, cast TBA, director TBA, these are all, you know, whether these happen or not, we don't know. But I just thought these are interesting. Another version of Little Shop, Lysistrata Jones, Matilda, Mean Girls, Memphis, Miss Saigon, Oliver. I mean, this list goes on.
Matilda and Memphis should both be movies, the musicals.
I agree. Spring Awakening, which I think would make an interesting movie as well.
Oh, I think that would be a phenomenal movie. Yes. I think American Psycho, the musical, would be another movie. Let's just do all of Duncan Sheik's.
Yeah. Don't know about that one for me. And then at the bottom of the list, and maybe because it's in alphabetical order, is Wicked. But of course, we've been talking about a movie musical of Wicked since time in memoriam. But I think that's interesting. There will be a link to the whole Playbill article on offstageonair.com that you can look
at. It's almost like the golden age of Hollywood again with movie musicals.
Well, we'll see if these are ever going to be done. But there's a Sunset Boulevard's got a is in the works with Rob Ashford directing, and Glenn Close already signed on. So interesting.
Yeah.
So that's that. I do also want to say that I did participate in the Concord Theatricals book club on how to transcend a marriage. And I was part of the, it really wasn't a book club discussion. It was really more of a talk back. And it had Sarah Rule. It was moderated by Tony Chavarasta, who is her husband. But it had two other performers, Austin Smith and Lena Hall. And this is something that will interest you, that I learned about Lena Hall's husband.
Tell me.
Does Legos.
Oh, well, I mean, no wonder I love Lena, and now I love her husband just as much. He loves the Legos like Nicole.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, I've never spent any time with her as a human being, just watching her, like, talk and stuff. I think I'm in love with her now.
Oh, I've been in love with her. I totally agree with you. Yeah,
she's just got a great energy. And
she really does. Like, just as a person, not just as a talent. Like, you're kind of like, oh, I like who you are. You're not just talented.
Yep. So the New York Times came out with the best theater of 2020. The New York Times, amongst other media outlets, and, you know, they do their best of everything. But their best of theater, it's interesting because we didn't have much theater in 2020.
I know. I'm wondering. I was like, how are all these best of lists going to work this year?
Yeah. And so one of them was Hamlet. And this best of course, is done by Jesse Green because I was just about to say Mel Gusso. That's how old I am. Ben Brantley.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's like three people ago, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that was Frank Rich and Mel Gusso back in the day. Yeah. So Hamlet, Dana H by Lucas Nath. I don't remember Dana H, but it was at the mm-hmm. Vineyard Theater. A Girl from the North Country, which mm-hmm. I think could be a movie as well.
Yeah.
Benefits, Mama Got a Cough, which was a Zoom piece, which I haven't heard of. It's a 14-minute film by the playwright Jordan E. Cooper.
Hmm.
Equitable Dinners. Three Kings from the London's Old Vic. And other things. I mean, there's a whole list. So, and then there was 11 ways that we found theater without theater. And there's a list of things that was done virtually. So it's out there. Link on offstageonair.com. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. So let's take a little, a quick break right now and listen to another piece of music from a possible movie musical. And that is the prom song, because I don't know, prom is on my brain with it coming out on Netflix next week.
That's but totally
it's called,
cool.
It's called Prom Song, and this is from Everybody's Talking About Jamie.
All the boys at the prom are looking pretty fly.
Prom song.
Yeah, everyone's talking about Jamie looks pretty cool. There's a there's already a trailer out for it.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, there is.
No, I'll have to go look. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's out there. I'll put a link in the notes.
All right.
How's that sound? How's that sound? Well, let's let folks hear our conversation with Sky Candy.
Okay.
That we just ran across while taking a walk in the woods.
Who knew?
Who knew? Here they are. Nicole, thank you so much for going for a walk with me in the woods today.
Oh, it was cold and it was rainy, but it was delightful.
It's crisp and beautiful, and the leaves are not changing because we live in Austin.
No, there was a little bit of orange.
Oh, wait. What's the... Why is the Zoom machine here in the middle of the woods?
Let's go in.
It's Saturday. I didn't want to work.
Well, you know what? It's here. Let's explore.
All right, let's go in. Oh my God. We are in East Austin. It's Guy Candy.
Hello.
Hello.
We have here from Sky Candy, Winnie Shaw. How are you, Winnie?
I'm doing great. How are you, Lisa?
And Ginger Snaps. Welcome back to the show, both of you.
Hello.
So we haven't had Sky Candy on in a while, and you are, of course, doing a holiday thingamajig, if I might use the jargon words, called Home for the Holidays. Tell us about this event.
Yeah, so since June, we've been doing collaborations with local Austin musicians. So this time we're doing a holiday collaboration with Minor Mishap Marching Band. They're one of the first groups we ever collaborated with, so they're kind of an old favorite of ours. And we loved the idea of bringing like really upbeat, brassy, fun music that's like communal feeling during a time that we can't be physically together, but that we can still be together.
I should tell you that Minor Mishap was my sorority name in college. So, well, what is it? So, you know, Sky Candy, we know, is a very physical company. You do a lot of things, you know, circus arts and things like that. And we think of people together, and I hear marching band. Is this a online thing or an in-person thing?
It is an online thing. For the time being, we're not doing in-person shows for the foreseeable future, though we are starting some little plans for maybe 2021. We'll see how things go. But Ginger can tell you all about the awesome performers that we have booked for this one. Thanks to the magical Zoom machine and the internet, we are able to have guest performers from all around the country. So we've really been able to expand who we get to have in our shows, which is pretty cool.
Yay. So Ginger, tell us who's who, what, how, when, why, etc.
Why? I'm going to start with why. And the why is because everything's hard and weird and crazy right now. And we're all going to be stuck at home for the holidays. So why not have some fun with it? But yeah, we're really excited that we can bring in guest performers from anywhere. So we have a really great lineup of guests. Our first person is Cicely Green, who is a really amazing silks performer. And then we have Honey Coco Bordeaux, who is a burlesque performer from Dallas, who will also be a guest performer with us. And lastly, Alexa Caparera, who is a local dancer. You've seen her with all sorts of stuff around town. She does really amazing, modern, interesting, exploratory kind of movement work. So it's really fun that despite all the craziness going on, we found this really nice silver lining where we can bring a lot of variety into our shows and work with artists that we would have only dreamt of working with previously.
So are these pieces going to be done live streamed? Or are you pre-recording them and showing them on the 19th?
All of these will be pre-recorded. What we've discovered, especially amongst our staff, is that people have a really fun time basically making their own music videos for each of the songs. So we end up with a really great mix of a live piece that was recorded straight through and something that has maybe three or four different scenes within it and is very music video kind of amorphous, which is pretty exciting too. And so we'll have our staff members involved as well. We're gonna have Marissa Paisano is going to be doing a few different apparatus for her act. And MK Ultra will be doing a pole act. Winnie is going to be performing a hammock act, and Molly Bentley will be doing a lyra act, and I am going to try and not die working on a moon act.
Working on a what? I'm sorry?
I have an apparatus that's an aerial moon, and so it looks like a crescent moon, and so it looks like, oh, so sweet and pretty, but the reality is because it's very misbalanced in weight because of the tape. It is the apparatus that has tossed me more than any other. It literally flung me off of it like a bucking horse last week, which I have hilarious video of. But yeah, it is a evil little apparatus.
Well, Winnie, I don't think I have ever seen you perform. Tell us about what you're going to be doing.
Oh man, so I haven't performed in a long time. I think as I've transitioned more to running Sky Candy and less of getting to be a performer, it's been a thing that I've let go.
Yeah.
So this act will feature, I'm going to do a little bit of dancing in my stilts in a field. So you can watch me be awkward as a polar bear. and then that same polar bear sand stilts, I have a hammock act that I've been working on. So yeah, Ginger and I are actually going to refilm it on Wednesdays because I cut my first video together and I'm like, oh, this isn't perfect. I'm going to keep working on it. So it's in some ways a lot like getting ready for a regular show. It's also, you know, and speaking of having performers from all around the country, man, like I have friends from Houston and New York and Bogota, Colombia, who are coming to see this show. And I'm like,
wow.
Oh my God, like that friend, shout out to Kate, who used to live in Austin.
Hey Kate.
That show, you know, is able to like buy tickets for her and her partner, and I'm like, this is so awesome. I get to perform for Kate, who's I think never seen me perform.
Wow. So to all of the various performers, are they all performing to a Minor Mishap marching band, which I like to call MMMB? That's just what I call them. Are they all performing to that music, or is there going to be other music as well?
It's all to the music of M cubed B. So it's mostly songs off their new album Space Dog, and Minor Mishap has also given us a couple of videos of them in all their different little tiny Zoom windows playing as a giant band. So we'll get to also have their kind of pandemic music videos as part of the show too, which will be fun.
That's awesome.
By the way, Space Dog was my pet's sorority name in college. So I want to go back. You had said you're going to be working in stilts in a field. Yeah. So when I think of stilts, you know, of course, you have the stilts that painters wear that have like big feet, big footprint. But most stilts that I've seen, circus performers and circus arts, it's a small little peg of a foot, which doesn't really would seem to be kind of dangerous in a field.
Yeah, I'm actually using my jumping stilts, which are specifically designed with rims in them.
Those excite me.
Yeah, I find them easier to sort of dance and move around in than like the painter stilts or even the more traditional circus stilts. It is still a little scary because the field is not very, it's not perfect level. There's definitely stuff there. I've definitely stepped on some ant hills, which thankfully my legs are farther from the ants now, so they can't get me as quickly. But yeah, there's been some fun challenges. It's my own doing. We actually did a photo shoot here last weekend. We did a safe distance photo shoot with our photographer friend, Eric Peterson. And I was like, oh, I'll practice my routine while I'm in this field. And I caught a bunch of footage of it. And I'm like, oh man, this looks so good. I have to,
yeah,
to set up this rig again so I can do this, do all of this again. So it's,
well, that's part of what's so exciting with it, is also being able to be creative about where you can take your artwork and where to film it, mm-hmm. and like really get into all of that fun of making your little music video.
Well, that's great. So I know this is set as an event on December 19th on Saturday. Where can folks get information about it?
You can go to skycandyaustin.com to learn more about it, or skycandyhome.eventbrite.com.
Great. Now, if folks are not available on the 19th, can they still get tickets and see it later on?
Yes, we make videos. So the beautiful thing about working with local musicians is that we actually pay them for the licensing for their music. So we get to have it in perpetuity, or, you know, for the terms that we worked out. So it'll also be available on Vimeo on demand afterwards. And we'll have links to that on our website and in all of our social channels.
Yeah, that's awesome. Folks can get information at skycandyaustin.com. It's called Home for the Holidays. It's on Saturday, December 19th at 8 p.m. Winnie, tell us what's going on. We haven't talked to you since this COVID thing started. What is Sky Candy doing? I read on your site that you're having limited classes, so you have some people coming in, but what's going on with Sky Candy?
So we've got a mix of stuff going on. So starting in March, we launched an online, a series of online classes. So we have online drop-in classes in flexibility and handstand and dance, and other things that you can do safely at home. We didn't offer aerial classes because that wasn't something that necessarily all of our students had access to safe rigging.
I have an aerial rig here in my house, so...
We had to get her off it so we could start our go out to the field and do our own thing.
But yeah, starting in June, we started allowing staff back on a limited basis to start training. And we did what we call point rentals, which are basically just like renting bits of the studio to train. In August, we brought back students for point rentals. And then we did our first group of series classes again that ran in October, November. Actually, they're running right now. Which has been so good. It's actually been a little while since I've taught because, again, I was focusing on running Sky Kids.
Sure.
But it feels so good to teach people, and people are so happy to be there, and we're doing all the protocols. We're operating at less than 10% capacity most of the time. Everyone is in a mask for the full time, which there are an amazing amount of things you can do in a mask while still being in the air and looking awesome. Everyone's staying 6 feet apart. We're doing the hand hygiene. We're still cleaning surfaces. So we're doing all the things, and it still feels really good to be around people. And starting in January, we're actually going to be introducing classes for new students again. So we're going to have intro classes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting. And folks can get information about the things going on at the same website, skycandyaustin.com. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us in our Zoom machine.
Yes, this is an exciting little sidetrack from our walk in the woods. I'm surprised we didn't see Winnie running around in the stilts.
We are all trying to hang in, and I'm glad to see that you guys are still kicking. It's hard. As someone who operates a venue myself, I know that, you know, you still have bills to pay. And you're not able to make the money that you were. So I'm glad that you're working and making sure that everything is going and going safely.
Yeah, we're doing the best we can. And hopefully I will keep hoping that there will be some more federal support that trickles down to us little small businesses.
I'll jazz hand for that.
Us as well. Jazz hands all around. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing the show.
Hey.
Thank you.
Home for the holidays. I have some news about Ginger Snaps.
Tell me, what's the news?
I was looking on a website that I rarely look on called Facebook. Have you heard of it?
Yes, I've heard of it.
She shows a ring on her left hand. She is engaged.
Well, that's a congratulations. We could have. I wish I had known that while we were in the woods.
We didn't know it in the woods.
No.
Yep. So we were, you know. Oh, darn it. I forgot the lyric to that song, In the Woods, from Into the Woods.
I don't know which song of Into the Woods we want.
The one that says In the Woods. It's got In the Woods.
Into the Woods, It's Time to Go?
No, no. In the Woods. Things are different in the woods.
Oh.
That was the one I was trying to come up with. But I'm not very smart. Yep. There you go. So we're going to take a little break. If we have time, we'll play that song, In the Woods, because we were in the woods. If not, we won't. So we will come back after these important underwriting announcements.
Wake up, stop dreaming. Stop.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. And who else?
We are here. It's Nicole and Lisa. Lisa and Nicole.
Okay. So we have lots of time to talk during this section. So hopefully we do. Well, and there's actually kind of a lot to talk about. I want to start with talking about the Flea Theater. In New York. Did you read this article?
Yeah, that they're stopping their residence program.
Well, if folks remember earlier in the summer, we talked about the Flea. They took a lot of heat for being racist, amongst other things. And then we come to find out that they don't pay many of their actors, a lot of them, especially a group within the Flea, called, oh my God, I forgot the name of it. I'll come up with it. But so they took the BATS, the BATS acting program. They had a system of putting them in shows and not paying them and calling it like they get education for it. So they took a lot of heat for that because they have a new building, a 3-theater building, a multi-million dollar building in New York City. They're off Broadway. They're not, I don't believe they're considered an off-Broadway theater. But yet, if you can afford a $3 million building, you can afford to throw some money at your actors.
I would think. I mean, I don't know who bought the building. Do they own it?
I believe they own it, but I believe I have it here in this the article, $25 million. So I'll just read this. This is from a New York Times article written by Gabe Cohn. Founded in 1996, the Flea has presented work by A.R. Gurney, Keane Gwen, Thomas Bradshaw, among others. Since 2017, it has operated out of a new 3-theater building in Tribeca that was estimated to cost $25 million. Nigel Smith, its artistic director, is one of the few Black artistic directors at a prominent New York City theater, which is weird because they're getting a lot of heat about being racist. So, yeah. So when that came out back in the summer, they vowed to do better. So do you know
getting rid of this whole emerging artist program.
Yeah, they're doing better by getting rid of the programs. So they're getting rid of 3 programs. One is the BATS acting program that we talked about earlier. There's also a residency program for directors and a writer's room. It's getting rid of all of those. I don't know, shame on them.
So I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, I don't get it. So I'm a little disappointed in the Flea.
I don't know. They haven't been able to do anything, so.
Well, that doesn't, all of this stuff happened. Right, and that's the other thing, is they're blaming a lot of this on COVID-19, but all the stuff that they're talking about in here happened prior to the pandemic. Excuse me. So yeah, it's... it's a little upsetting, and I hope that I'm not reading it correctly, but it doesn't sound good for the Flea, if you ask me.
I do not know. I mean, I don't know enough to base everything off of one article, so.
Well, it's 2 articles. So it was the article earlier, but yeah, that's true. Can't base everything off of one article. I do kind of trust the New York Times, but not everybody does.
I don't know enough. I mean, I'm not happy. I don't understand why you'd get rid of those programs, but I mean, I'm not in their meetings, so I don't know.
No, that's true. Well, that's very fair of you. I don't know that I'm as generous at this point for them, but mainly because, I mean, just on the face of it, if they took heat for these programs and the way they promised to make better and the way they handled it was by canceling the programs.
Yeah, but we don't know why. We don't know what happened. We don't know if they're doing other programs.
Oh,
we
I know. You made yourself very clear, and I appreciate that. I'm not as generous as you.
I'm not gonna make assumptions on people from one thing. I wanna learn more.
Which I love that about you.
I'm not happy with him right now.
Yeah. So there was an article in the Washington Post, which I like this. It's written by Peter Marks, who is a critic, but it's in the Washington Post, and it's talking about forming a cabinet-level person overseeing arts and culture. So that would be the Secretary of Arts and Culture, which would be a cabinet-level position. Other countries have similar positions. The United Kingdom has a culture secretary. Canada has a job minister of Canadian heritage. France has a culture minister. South Africa, minister of arts and culture. Vietnam, minister of culture. Australia, minister of communication, cyber safety, and the arts. More than 50 nations
because
have...
Because communication, cyber safety, and the arts all just seem like they should be lumped in together in one position.
That's true. But bottom line is there is nobody advocating at the level directly to the president for the arts. And along with that was, I don't know if you saw the article in the America for the Arts blog talking about they've been collecting data since this pandemic began. I've actually filled out several surveys for Ground Floor Theater, but the numbers are staggering about the financial losses. But prior to that, before I talk about that, I just want to talk about how important the arts and culture is to the financial being of the country. Where did I see this? The arts events generate $31.47 per person beyond what they spend at the theater. So that's for dinner and things like that. So the arts are a powerful, powerful force in our nation's economy. So
it's so much more than just the performance itself.
Correct. So our current administration kept trying to kill things at the sum of $4.8 trillion. It's just amazing. The arts are essential. We account for $877 billion a year in American productivity.
I know.
So what do you think about having a cabinet level person overseeing the arts?
I'm surprised we've never had one ever in our history of the US. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it would take an act of Congress, very similar
but
to-
I'm just saying after all these years, yep. All these different programs, like not one administration, like that just mind boggles me.
And yet it's been, you know, all the way, you know, even the most liberal administrations seems to discount the arts. Like that's
I'm mind boggled by it.
It's time that not happen anymore. And I think, you know, this COVID crisis has really put a magnifying glass on the fact that the arts community is a huge financial boon to the country and we are hurting.
I agree.
So I like the idea of having this person, and I'm hoping it's me, but I'd be happy if it was someone else.
Oh, okay. I'll send you up there.
So I think that would be good. They keep. Oh, so anyway, it would take an act of Congress, and the last time we had this was the Secretary of Homeland Security, which happened after 9/11, which, you know, I'm not sure I agree with.
The new one.
That's the newest one, yeah. But there are some things that the current administration could do without congressional. And I thought I underlined it. Oh, right. Here it is. A counselor to the president for the arts could be a nice step. It's not a cabinet level position, but it might be nice to have someone in there.
Like a liaison. So like, why not? I mean, just something.
Yep. And now I want to go back to talking about the American for the Arts and talking about the stuff that I just want to throw some of the numbers that they have. As we said, we are an $878 billion industry. We support 5.1 million jobs, and we are 4.5% of the nation's economy. That is more than agriculture or transportation or tourism.
Just about to say, what? How does that stand against other habits? But I mean, more than travel, that mind boggles me.
It does. It mind boggles me too.
Wouldn't you have to travel most a lot to see the art? You would. I don't know. Travel, I guess, mind boggles me.
I guess it depends on what they're considering travel. So the nonprofit arts organizations lost an estimated $14.6 billion to date because of the COVID crisis. 99% have canceled events. I'm surprised it's only 99%. I would think it was 100. That's 481 million admissions. Museums are losing $33 million a day, that says.
I mean, that makes sense because zoos alone, their income, I mean, zoos closed down, animals still have to be cared and fed for.
Yeah.
And 90% of their income is from people visiting. So, sure. You know, you can't stop. Animals don't know there's a pandemic. And I'm sorry, I have to
have a contrary opinion. My dog knows.
You might want to go tell the zebras.
So I found it interesting. So arts leaders were asked about barriers to reopening, and the top four answers were, and this is all very, makes complete sense to me. The number one, customers unlikely to attend, government restrictions and guidelines, staff and board do not feel it's safe. And number four, it's impractical to produce art in current environment. It's just really, really sad what we're going through.
It is sad. And I can't figure out how all these TV shows and movies have filmed and done everything that they've already done. Like all these Hallmark movies, they have like 12 days of Christmas and a new, and I'm like, when did they film all these? I had to look it up. They filmed them all this year in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't understand.
I'm with you. Yesterday, I woke up and I found myself underground in a pipe.
I was stuck in my garage and I couldn't get out.
I was truly expecting you to be down there, but I was down there in the pipe, and then we jumped in the Zoom machine, or I jumped in the Zoom machine all by myself. Shall we hear that?
Yes, let's.
Well, hello. I am underground in a big tube underground. And I'm waiting to hear, waiting for Nicole Shiro so we could go on to our next adventure, but she's not here. So we're just going to jump into the Zoom machine ourselves and see where we go. Okay, here we go. Ah, here we are at Austin Shakespeare. Love it. We so often find ourselves here. Hi, Ann Ciccolella.
Hi, Lisa. Good to see you on the Zoom machine.
It's good to be seen. And we have Tamil Parasami, all the way from Atlanta, Georgia, which I like to call Hotlanta. Welcome to Offstage and on the Air, Tamil.
Ah, yes. Thank you. Thank you for having me as a guest. And I can tell you right now, Atlanta is not hot.
Right now. Not right now, I wouldn't
pretty,
think.
It's pretty chilly right now, so...
Well, I'm thrilled to have y'all on. We're sort of working in dichotomies these days. Last week we had on Austin Playhouse, which was talking about Dickens and Victoria, Texas. And now we're going to be talking about William Shakespeare and Bollywood. So this is a class led by you, Tamil, correct?
Correct.
Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, sure. So this class is it's titled The Bard in Bollywood. And it's titled that way because it is, I guess people don't realize just how influential William Shakespeare was. Now, clearly, William Shakespeare has been pretty influential, we know, in the Western world, in Western society, Western literature. But we tend to not associate Shakespeare with the Eastern societies. And in the case of in India, like the influence of Shakespeare was prevalent because of the British rule,
right.
You know, when the British had rule over India. But what's very interesting is that Shakespeare was kind of assimilated into Indian culture as kind of a grassroots movement. And then when when Bollywood and Indian cinema began taking off, it kind of reversed itself because Shakespeare was already matriculated down to the villages. So now to connect with the people, they used the stories of Shakespeare as a means to bridge to the villages. And Bollywood began, like a lot of how Indian cinema is structured is actually closely related to how Shakespeare and his contemporaries structured their plays.
Yeah, I could actually see that now that you say that out loud. Now this workshop is more for people of Asian descent to participate, but those that aren't can come and watch. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Yeah, for people.
I just want to point out that that's two things that I've said correct.
We're just keeping track of that. Yeah,
gotta keep track.
Gotta. Yeah. So yeah. In fact, this class. Yeah. If you would like to be a participant, we are structuring it in such a way that if you want to flex your Shakespeare muscles, work on a monologue or a scene, we can do that. But what we prefer is that you are of Middle Eastern or South Asian descent, and you know the term for that is MESA, MESA, and this is just because this allows there are not as many MESA actors involved, especially within Renaissance drama, and it would be really nice to give them a spotlight, to give them a chance to work on it, especially since and I know this is universal, but just trying to work with Shakespeare, it already seems like it's an obstacle. Just I'm sure people that are listening in and hearing like let's do Shakespeare, I'm sure there's like a little a little jolt of like nerves that are going through their bodies right now, and just giving them a chance to work on this is I think really helps. But at the same time, the reason why I wanted this class to be open to everyone to at least observe is Bollywood is a universal thing. It is not like an Indian only thing. There are, in fact, with a lot of my friends, I have more friends who are not Indian who watch more Bollywood films than I do. So there's a great appreciation of Bollywood and Indian cinema just globally. And I think just people understanding that connection to Shakespeare, that information should be shared for all.
Right. So if I am a MESA actor, which I'm not, but if I was, what is the difference for me? How do I approach a Shakespearean role differently than say a Caucasian actor would?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's a difference per se, but this is going again to just any actor performing Shakespeare, you're bringing your own experiences. And actually this is like any actor portraying anything really.
Sure.
You're bringing your own experiences to the role. In the case of a MESA actor, we have a unique experience that is different from, other ethnicities, other groups. So bringing that, there's that aspect that is not really highlighted, that in terms of this work, in terms of this workshop per se, it allows us to bring that out there. It allows, with this workshop, my aim is to talk to the participant and kind of use their experiences of being a MISA artist, and bring that into the work, bring that into the character, because we all come from unique perspectives, and utilizing that brings a unique story.
And is this also a chance to sort of ingrain in MISA performers to go out and try to get some of these roles, which you may not, you know, we all, or at least those of us that are brought up in a European kind of centric thing, when we think of Shakespeare, we get a vision in our head, and it's typically not an Indian character or a persona. So would that, I would assume, keep a lot of MISA actors from actually auditioning for the roles?
Yes, I think you hit it right on the money. And that's one of the reasons why we want to connect to Bollywood, because a lot of that cinema is connected, you know, indirectly, but it was heavily influenced by Shakespeare. And yes, there is probably a barrier that MISA folks have created where they look at Shakespeare and they're like, that is for Europeans, that is a Western thing that I'm not, you know, directed, you know, I'm not connected to,
right.
And to show that it is also an Eastern thing. It is very pervasive in MISA society specifically. That I'm aiming to remove that barrier. You know, myself, I've done over 36 professional productions in either Shakespeare or, you know, a work by a Shakespeare contemporary. So, yeah.
Well, and I know that Austin Shakespeare has really taken the forefront on this. I guess it was, what, 2 seasons ago or 3 seasons ago that you did a Bollywood version of Two Gentlemen from Verona? I forgot which one.
It's Twelfth Night, and it's almost 10 years ago.
Was it really?
And we're going to do it again. I think it's 8. I think it's 8 years ago. So we cooked up with Tamil when we were doing Indian Ink, and it was, in fact, the first Indian role he'd ever done.
Yes.
He'd done Scottish and all sorts. So we want to hire more Indian actors as we do this Bollywood Indian this time. And we hope that it will be in the fall of 2021 at the Rollins Theater. We all know we'll wait to see how that works out. But
yep,
it will be. Whenever it will be, it will be. So we're trying to build up our connections with Indian actors. We have some. But we also, Tamil is an expert and wants to do some training and pretty traditional methods, but through that lens of a Bollywood and Indian, right, and South Asian culture.
Well, I know that Austin has a relatively large population of South Asian and Indian people. I don't know how many of those are actors, but inside everybody, as you know, all the world is a stage. So tell us when this class is and how folks can get information.
Sure. This class will be in a Wednesday, December 16th at 7:30 p.m. Central. And you can find out more information by going to austinshakespeare.org. And there should be I think I saw a link on the front page taking you directly to the Bard in Bollywood.
There is indeed. I did see it. Well, that is awesome. I hope it is well attended and that you have a good time doing it.
Thank you. And thanks for doing Offstage and On the Air. We sure appreciate being in your Zoom machine.
You're welcome. I love my Zoom machine. Well, we'll see you next time we see you. Now, Austin Shakespeare, they're actually, Anna's always doing groundbreaking stuff. And
Anne doesn't stop.
Tamil Parasamy and doing this class for MESA actors in Shakespeare, I think is pretty incredible.
Yeah. Anne's always, she's always on the move.
She is.
Anne hustles. She does not sit still.
She is. I'm going to hope to maybe take the class myself.
That would be cool.
All right. In our last few moments, I wanted to talk about a couple of things. The Reverb Arts Festival. Did you hear about this one?
No.
Reverb Arts. It's a Roundabout Theater Company and a consortium of companies called the All Abilities Consortium. It's a theater festival for disabled artists. And it... is Roundabout Theater along with Action Play, Collab Theater Group, Dream Street Theater Company, and Epic Players are doing this festival. And they're taking submissions that are open now through January 5th. I think it's great that a major nonprofit theater company that has Broadway houses is coordinating with disability actors and bringing attention to that. That's really good.
I'm shaking my head in the Zoom machine. Yes, that's just awesome.
One of the things that's really come out of the COVID-19 crisis, as well as the We See You White Theater movement, that has really made a lot of the more standard, and I'm using air quotes, theaters look at the whole variety of theater that's available. And I think that's attributable to that in many ways. I don't know that we'd be doing that if those two things didn't happen. I want to read the last article, or the last paragraph of this article, which was on Broadway World, written by, it's just the news desk, unattributed. This is a first of, This is a first of its kind initiative, a world-class Broadway theater coming together with four smaller performing arts organizations and an arts organization, an arts education consortium to build a supportive professional community that provides artists with disabilities a bigger microphone, a bigger stage, and audiences a bigger chance to see their stories are everyone's stories. And that was, it's a quote attributed to Stephen Yaffe, who's the chair of Arts for All Abilities. Oh, and the super duper last thing I want to talk about is just Elizabeth Vincentelli wrote in the New York Times a whole expose on Dallas theater.
Good or bad?
It was good for the most part. And it was all basically was saying she would never see it. She's never left DFW airport. Still hasn't. But I want to know.
She's curious.
Well, we were talking about this in our theater consortium, ATX Theater, about what organization was able to pull the strings to get that on her radar to come and look at the theater. And it's not just Dallas Theater Center and Dallas Summer Musicals. It's these small theaters, like we have so many of them, and they got a feature in the New York Times.
Well, they have a theater group, just like Houston does, that... We have a theater group, but we don't have a group that is like the tourism promoting theater district like they do in both of those cities.
Right. And that's what ATX Theater is trying to become.
Exactly. Like you're on that path. Like you got off the highway now.
We're off the highway.
But Dallas and Houston have had a large support and backing behind that for a while now to build that and grow it. So
true. All right. Well, we are done for this week. What a wonderful show.
Exciting.
So if we have time, we're going to go out with Never Say Never from Lysistrata Jones, one of the plays that is going to be a movie. And otherwise, Nicole and I are just going to chill and see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air.
Yoo-hoo.
Bye.
Ciao.
That's it.
Boom.